Across the globe, common citizens, dissatisfied with life as they know it, have toppled governments in Tunisia and Egypt. Right here, everyday Americans are also taking to the streets to protest plans to cut budgets and limit the rights of unions. Protests from parts of Africa to parts of America. That's our show this week on American Dream. I'm your host, Nisa Islam. Brings about a change. It was the dissatisfaction of the early American settlers with the European rule that brought them to America. This country was founded on the ability of citizens to protest and revolt. There was the American Revolution, the Civil War, the War of 1812, sit-ins, civil rights protests, the Vietnam War, protests in support of the war, environmental protests, demonstrations for animal rights, and anti-war protests for the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. A thread throughout many of these protests has been the role workers and unions have played. I went to Howard University to ask Dr. Lorenzo Morris, a professor of political science, about the history of workers and unions in American protest movements.
Well, the struggle goes back a long way, probably heightening, ironically, after the end of the Civil War, when labor unions began to emerge, and they had a great deal of difficulty in the South. Some of that was eased by the segregation of the period, so that when black labor unions began to emerge in the early 1900s, and around 1930 in particular, they became a major force for protest and on the civil rights side. So as the years went by, when the industries were developing and really beginning to make profits, and as wars began to emerge and labor was not expendable, the unions became more powerful in their negotiations. There were lockout attempts and things like that that involved debates around Taft-Hartley, of course, that were overcome by persistent, not only protests, but demands. The need for labor in an expanding economy was inescapable. And of course, now we come to a period in that decline. And that changes the external power, if you will, of labor unions. The level of skill development, where organized labor was not an essential entree into the is not an essential entree into employment for our large numbers of people, means that many people can survive well without the immediate benefit of organized labor. But at a time when they were almost 30% of the population, they set the tone for salary and for wages around the country. And many people know enough about the early history, but they don't often think about the protests that go along with it. And some of those were not only labor protests, they were social protests, including civil rights protests, which in every major instance were subsidized by labor. And we forget about that. We think about 63 with Glamour, but labor unions helped subsidize and support that protest, as well as many others.
Sometimes the protesters had friends in high places that were influential in helping achieve their goals, like First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt and A. Philip Randolph. Couple that with the blood, sweat, and tears of people dedicated to the cause. Next, I pose the same historical question to Dr. Elizabeth Clark Lewis, a history professor at Howard University.
I think that, particularly for African Americans, the issue of labor has always been a very sensitive one. And throughout the 19th century, we know that there were a number of labor actions and labor activities that African Americans were involved in. But more recently, in the 20th century, the proposed march on Washington under the Roosevelt administration was led by laborers who were concerned about labor issues. Of course, the March on Washington in 1963, A. Philip Randolph, who proposed the mid-1930s protest, was very involved with the same March on Washington in 1963. Up through many aspects of the Million Man March talked about labor issues. So there's been this real continuum about African Americans being concerned about labor issues from the 19th through the major protests of the 20th century and even into this century. So it's consistent that issues for work and workers are central to not just labor's experiences, but also African-American experiences in the United States.
Andrew Fieldhouse is a federal budget policy analyst with the Economic Policy Institute. He shared some historical information on union organizing after World War II.
You sort of think of the middle class as being built as we come out of World War II. Obviously, the country was wrecked by the Great Depression. The economy finally gets out when you have the big industrialization of World War II. And then coming back from the war, we put a ton of money into education, the GI Bill, a ton of money into transportation, investing in what would create the middle class. A large part of that was organized labor. You had cooperation between management and labor. You had unions. We've seen a decline in private sector unionization. The late 70s, sort of as the Chamber of Commerce comes to power and the conservative movement really organizes itself better, you see private sector unions come under assault. Our politics have not been amenable to organizing. In fact, we're doing the policy stance has made it progressively harder for private sector unions. And you've seen since the late 70s a real decoupling of productivity growth and real wage growth. It's kind of funny if you look at the situation in Wisconsin or some of the other states. You're pitting private sector workers against public sector workers. Realistically, it's the worker who's been screwed over by the politics of the last 30 years.
In an effort to narrow the budget deficit, the Republican-controlled House of Representatives has passed a bill cutting some $61.5 billion from the 2011 budget. These massive cuts could mean the end of city services and layoffs. Thousands of Americans have taken to the streets in Michigan, Florida, Tennessee, Wisconsin, Ohio, and Indiana to protest budget cuts and plans to limit the power of unions. A recent protest in Wisconsin was the largest in that state's history, with close to 100,000 people marching in the streets. It's not only brought out workers, but famous personalities who support the workers. The Reverend Jesse Jackson, who has a long history of protesting during the civil rights era and supporting workers' rights, spoke in Madison, Wisconsin also. Here's a little of what he had to say.
Help to show support. They came to inspire workers, to stand with workers. Because all around the country, we see now 59 million Americans not have no health insurance. Insurance fees are still rising. 49 million Americans are in poverty. 44 million are on food stamps. We give the wealthiest Americans a tax cut at Christmas time and not allow public workers. It's not right. The workers ought to fight back, and they are fighting back, and they're going to win.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson spoke about the historical benefits of the right to vote. He assured the protesters that the victory is theirs. I'm on the streets in Washington, D.C., asking people what they think about the protests in Wisconsin.
I think they have a right to better benefits, things of that nature. So I think they do have a voice.
The state has its issue, obviously, and they got to save money somewhere. But I think the approach is a bit wrong. There are definitely other ways of cutting the budget, and there's definitely different approaches to how they can govern to get it done. So they got to really pay attention. I mean, the unions were put there for a reason. The actions they're taking kind of disqualifies what the unions can actually do, but they can moderate what they're asking for, and they can probably come to some solution.
I kind of feel like the citizens are, how do I say this? They are being affected by poor spending choices of their government. I don't really know, though, what else can they do?
I think he should have separated the movement against the union from the budget. And I'm somewhat sympathetic as far as the reducing the power of the union, but they shouldn't have been done at the same time.
I think if they're paying money for union rights, they should have they should have access to the union. Like if you're paying a fee every month for this union, the union should always have your back, because you're coming out your pocket from your check to pay for this union.
our street experts had distinct opinions about the Wisconsin protests. I also asked Dr. Morris his opinion of the growing numbers of protesters around the country.
Well, to me, it's a fascinating experience in the best of Americanisms, because I think labor has been a source of strength for progressive thought without it being radical. It has been weakened. Labor is now 12%. Organized labor is 12% of the population. And public unions are the strongest now of the labor unions. But public unions, like many of the older labor unions, reach across ethnic diversity, religious diversity, and other things. So when they protest, that very act brings the country together in ways that few other acts can do of a political nature. And they bring the country together in ways that start off as partisan in perceptions, but bridge even partisan gaps, so that you see an increasing consciousness of the importance of very fundamental levels of American political participation in the labor movement, that is, in the real private sector, not just the praise of the, what I call the Wall Street private sector. That is, people that are really indigenous to the immediate concerns that are being protested. And while labor unions may have what some people consider material or narrow-minded wage demands, you don't have successful labor organizing without an understanding of other parts of the work environment. Public labor unions have always been public concerned, even if they also want income for their members. And one of the things to remember is public and private have been essential to the overall level of pay for non-unionized labor, which is something often forgotten.
The protesters represent the best that America has to offer. Old, young, middle-aged, black, white, teachers, police officers, firefighters, private sector workers, public sector workers, and more. Here's what Dr. Clark Lewis had to say about the protesters.
I think that Wisconsin is very important because it absolutely reminds individuals in the United States that labor issues are central to not just the way of life, but also many of the sacrifices that workers have made over the years. I think of things as simple as the lunch hours that we know today, weekends that we know today, the idea that there is an end to the day of labor. 8 hours, depending on, I guess, if you work for Walmart, et cetera, which those kinds of changes that were positive for workers were won at the hands of labor and labor protest. And I think that what's going on in Wisconsin is very important, that laborers are in fact saying that it is unfair to make all of the cuts and all of the changes that need to be made at the local, regional, state, or federal level, that they're all being made on the backs of workers. It is at the very least unbalanced. And I think that I know that it puts far too much emphasis on cuts for those persons who are in many cases already at the margins. So we have to look and be more balanced in our activities and our respect for labor.
Mr. Fieldhouse believes Wisconsin's Governor Scott Walker's motivation in limiting union rights is more about politics than about saving money. He explains.
I absolutely feel for the workers in Wisconsin. I believe that their right to collective bargaining is under assault, under false pretense. Governor Scott Walker has claimed that this is about budget implications. He just passed a bill with $117 million worth of tax cuts for businesses. If your budget's broke, you don't do that. I see that as a telltale sign of hypocrisy. The workers are also willing to concede to benefit cuts. They're willing to talk compensation reductions, but it's not about that for him. This is a chance to break public sector unions, the strongest bastion of organized labor in this country. I think it's a political assault on the Democratic Party. They see organized labor as a strong backing of the Democratic Party. So a lot of these Republican governors view this as an opportunity to exploit fiscal challenges to really undermine the base, saw off the knees of the Democratic Party.
Were our experts surprised that Americans were protesting something other than a war?
I don't think that we should be surprised at all. I think the issues that laborers face, the challenges, as well as the opportunities, are such that individuals are now seeing that this is an important stand to take. And it's not just Wisconsin. These issues are pending in states like New Jersey, New York, and a number of other states where the issue of compensation, fair and balanced compensation, is central to people's ways of life. So I think it is very important what's going on, and it's indicative of what's going to go on in the future.
At least from my perspective, and I have to give a sort of special observation here, I would be considered an extreme liberal by many perspectives, though I don't think a radical. My perspective, I have been so disappointed by even Democratic Party's inability to give deference to the policy interest. I'm not talking about the special interest, the policy interest of organized labor, and it looked like it was just being surpassed. There's a lot of hostility to the public sector. Some of that, in my mind, has latent reactionary aspects to it, and even discriminatory aspects, because so much of the minority presence emphasizes public sector work, and a lot of it is political, because teachers vote more liberally than policemen. So you see in places like Wisconsin hostility to teacher unions, but not hostility to police unions. However, the surprise it comes largely from the fact that the America that used to exist, that gave rise to these unions, had been comfortable and now is recognizing the discomfort that might come without them. I think that, and ironically, the excesses of extreme conservatives, I view them as extreme, most people just like the leadership in Wisconsin, like the, you know, New Jersey Governor Christie, all of these people, their excessive behavior, while it appeared amusing in front of the media, is now beginning to show itself as dangerous to the stability of all labor and perhaps public sector service of many people.
Unions have played a major role in the American workforce. They help to create the middle class, and especially the African-American middle class. There are many benefits that Americans now take for granted that resulted from collective bargaining, such as the end of child labor, the 8-hour workday, paid overtime, compensation for workers injured on the job, unemployment, and health insurance, plus the minimum wage, just to name a few. All of these benefits have come at a financial cost, impacting the bottom line of businesses. If states are successful in their quest to limit union rights, those most affected will be African Americans. A recent labor study conducted by University of California, Berkeley, found 1 in 5 African American workers are employed in public sector jobs versus 1 in 6 white workers. African Americans are 30% more likely to hold such jobs than whites. For black men, the public sector includes everything from police officers and firefighters to sanitation workers and government clerks. It's the largest employer, providing 18% of jobs. For black women, it's the number 2 employer, accounting for 23.3% of jobs. Also, public sector unionized employees are more likely to support Democratic candidates. I asked Dr. Morris how the protests in Wisconsin and around the country are affecting the African American community.
Disproportionate number of black people work in the public sector. A disproportionate number larger than work in the labor unions in the public sector. But frankly, given the tenor of American media exposure in politics today, if I were going to put people up in the front camera, I wouldn't emphasize the minorities either. But they are there. Wisconsin is less distinctly minority than other states, though Milwaukee has a large population. But it benefits more if it's a positive benefit to public sector labor. It benefits minorities as much or more as anybody else. But more importantly, minorities are also a disproportionate part of the unorganized labor and not skilled. Therefore, any benefits that go to unorganized labor come from organized labor, and it can't, and this is usually not skilled labor. So that at both levels, at both sectors, they benefit. Many people look at this as a threat to taxpayers. Well, you can only be a taxpayer if you have a job. But more importantly than that, the stability of labor may have long-term impacts over the way in which the public sector functions that can be positive. We look at them as negative, but we must remember that the standards of public sector labor productivity have been set as much by unions as by government. Imagine that legislators and congressmen were getting together deciding how work is most efficiently done in these public sectors. That's impossible. They couldn't even have such a discussion. Were it not for the outside input of labor and others into public sector personnel evaluations, you wouldn't have clarity of standards that we have today.
What America is witnessing is not new. In 1936, President Roosevelt warned America of the battle with corporationists. Quote, "We had to struggle with the old enemies of peace, business and financial monopoly, speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism, sectionalism, war profiteering. We will continue every effort to end monopoly in business, to support collective bargaining, and to stop unfair competition, to abolish dishonorable trade practices. For all these, we have only just begun to fight." This is not 1936. This is 2011, but it sounds true today as well. Budget cuts and layoffs are facing many states. Is America broke? I pose this question to Mr. Fieldhouse.
No, this country is not broke. There's a very large deficit right now, which is understandable. We're coming out of a very large recession, the biggest recession since the Great Depression. Most of the budget, not most, a lot of the budget deficit is strictly economic. It results from a huge loss of revenue. There are roughly 14 million unemployed Americans right now. When you have a lot of workers lose their jobs, you lose taxpayers. The big problem is not the budget deficit. It's the situation in the labor market. As the economy recovers towards full employment, the budget deficit will come down. There is a structural budget deficit that we inherited from George W. Bush, and that needs to be addressed, but we're not broke by any sense. The comparisons between the United States and Greece or Ireland are totally fictitious. That's a case of fear-mongering.
Taking to the streets and protesting is a very personal decision. For some people, it's done as a last resort. For others, depending upon the issue, it's the first thing they want to do. I asked people on the streets of D.C. what would they protest about. Here's what they had to say.
I guess a blatant disrespect for, I guess, all of our rights or our voice to be heard, you know, as a people. You know, all of us have a right to better health care, better benefits, so I would get out there myself.
Well, I'm pretty old, so I'm not sure I have enough energy to protest anything anymore.
Well, I think people tend to protest for rights that are not being given towards them. So I think if anything that comes in my way that is unfair, and you know, with wages, with rights, with that kind of thing, you should protest about it because your voice should be heard.
Honestly speaking, better health care for children, honestly. That would be it. Every child should be covered. End of story.
People are risking life and limb overseas to protest their way of life. They want better jobs, higher incomes, the right to vote for leaders, and overall a better way of life. Our experts agreed that what we're seeing overseas will not likely come to America, and here's why.
At least technically we have something called a democracy. The difference there is that I think if you look at the inequalities of some of the countries, what happens in those places is that little bit of progress is that was enough to wake people up to how much inequality there was. And you have conservative regimes that have ironically been pro-American, like Mubarak in Egypt and Ali in Tunisia. You have regimes that have stabilized inequality and kept our oil prices down. And this is the point.
I don't think so. As I said, you have A. Philip Randolph in the 1930s on the cusp of World War I proposing to bring laborers to Washington, D.C., to the seat of government. He forced President Roosevelt to institute fair labor standards. In the 1960s, the protest, people forget, of Dr. Martin Luther King was for jobs and equity. So the whole issue of labor has been central to not just the issues of the 20th century, the 19th century, 20th century, and this continuum, we will see it moving forward as we go through the 21st century.
The protests seen in Africa have likely inspired Americans to look at their condition and consider protesting as well. What started in Wisconsin has now spread to six states, with more to follow. Close to 600 people protested in Washington, D.C. last week in front of a Bank of America about taxes. The winds of change are blowing. For Press TV in Washington, I'm Nisa Islam.